Good morning, everybody. I'm going to start off with a little question. Is this on? That's better. Thank you. Superb. So who likes to be different? Who likes to stand out from the crowd? Edward's got two hands up. He's the only one. Oh, no, there's one more over there. A few more. Okay. So there's a few of you who like to stand out. I'm guessing that means the rest of you are the kind of people who prefer to kind of blend in. Suzanne's definitely smiling with that. Prefer to kind of fit in with the world around you. You okay? That's actually the majority. So there's no shame in being the kind of person that prefers to fit in. Apparently, 75% of people in any given situation are those who prefer to kind of blend in and fit in with those around you. There's been loads of studies in this. Apparently, someone called Solomon Asch did a whole load of experiments in psychology. And he's proven, as much as you can prove anything in psychology, that 75% of people prefer to blend and fit in. And the theory for that is that it's kind of how we're wired to be social and communal beings, that we prefer to be accepted and we feel safe if we're the same, or at least if we feel the same as those around us. The difficulty is that that makes today's passage and our new series quite hard work. You see, today we're moving on from idols. If you've been here over the last 6 weeks or so, you know we've been in a series on smashing idols. But we're moving on from that today, and we're starting something new. And we've called it, very simply, different. Just one word, different. We're going to be looking at the longest stretch of Jesus' teaching in the Bible, which comes in one go, known as the Sermon on the Mount. Now, for many of you, that will be very, very familiar. But actually, we haven't looked at it here for over a decade. So we thought it was time to go back. The situation is that crowds of followers have come to Jesus, hungry to hear his teaching. So he goes up on a hillside, the crowds come to him, he sits down, which was the position generally taken of a teacher or a rabbi, and then he teaches them. And it's all recorded for us in three chapters in Matthew's account of the life of Jesus, in Matthew chapters 5 to 7. So first, a little bit of introduction. What is the Sermon on the Mount? And why have we called this series different? Well, in many ways, Jesus' words in this passage are the nearest thing we have to a Christian manifesto. It's Jesus' description of what he wants his followers to be and to do. Now, John Stott was a great English preacher, and he wrote an excellent commentary on the Sermon on the Mount, and he put it like this. I'm going to put some words up from John Stott. Just bear with this, because there's quite a lot in what he's saying here. The essential theme of the whole Bible, from beginning to end, is that God's purpose is to call out a people for himself. That this people is a holy people, set apart from the world, to belong to him and to obey him. And that its vocation, its job or its role, is to be true to its identity. That is, to be holy or different in all its outlook and behavior. Now, there's a lot in there. I'm not sure I could say quite so much in that number of words. To put it in the words that God uses in the Bible, just after God rescued his people from slavery in Egypt and he affirmed them as his people, he then says to them this. We'll put on the next slide. This is from Leviticus. God says, I am the Lord your God. You shall not do as they do in the land of Egypt, where you dwelt. And you shall not do as they do in the land of Canaan, to which I am bringing you. You shall not walk in their statutes. You shall do my will and keep my statutes and walk in them. I am the Lord your God. So God says, you are my people, you are different, live my ways, so live differently. And it's a message that we know is repeated throughout the Bible. There's, be holy as I am holy, do not conform to the pattern of this world, and so on. So particularly for those of us who are part of that majority who are inclined to fit in and be like those around us, this can be difficult teaching. And I think this is going to be quite a challenging series for us. You're going to hear some tough questions. Jesus covers identity, relationships, attitudes of the heart, values, moral standards, approaches to money, thoughts and ambition, lifestyle choices, and loads more. So it's really a reality check of where our heart is and what's really important to us. And right at the end, Jesus repeats the same question in a number of different ways, basically saying, are you in? Are you one of my people? Or are you out? Okay, so that's going to be the big picture. That's an overview of the next 10 weeks of what we're going to be looking at. But today, we're going to be kicking off, and we're actually slightly out of sequence. We're going to jump in at verses 13 to 16 of chapter 5. So if you've got your Bibles, it's on page 916. But we're going to put it up on screen as well. And although we're slightly out of sequence, this passage today really captures the theme of the series perfectly. So Sally is going to come up and read these verses for us.
You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven.
Thanks, Sally. Okay, so probably for most of us here, really familiar words. But hopefully this morning you'll just get to see them in that context of what Jesus is teaching through the Sermon on the Mount. So how would people describe you, do you think? How would the person who sits on the desk next to you at work, if you have a desk at work, how would they describe you? How would that kind of semi-distant relative who knows you but maybe doesn't know you perfectly, how would they describe you? How would your neighbour think of you or describe you? Now, I think that can be a difficult question because it might throw up a whole load of things about how we perceive ourselves. But this is what I want us to get to. How in God's purposes would you like others to think of you and the things that you do? Not how for your own kind of self-satisfaction or self-esteem would you like people to think of you, but how within God's purposes would you like them to think of you and the things you do? Now, the phrase the salt of the earth is really familiar. So just, what does it mean to you? What does the phrase the salt of the earth mean to you? Throw out a few words or thoughts.
Good salt.
A good salt, okay. Good person. Anything else?
Simple.
Sorry?
Simple.
Simple person, okay. Anything else?
Special.
Yeah, okay. Yep, so someone is good, someone is honest, someone who's quite straightforward, maybe someone who's there for other people. But there is a bit of a danger when we have a familiar phrase like this in the Bible, that if the phrase came from the Bible, it might well have taken on a bit of a meaning of its own since the Bible. So we just need to think for a minute what it actually meant at the time to Jesus' listeners. Very simply, salt is part of the earth, is literally part of the earth. But it's a lot more valuable than the mud and the soil and the rocks and all the other dirty and inconsequential stuff around it. And that's because it's useful. So, as Claire said, always have a little bit of a demonstration. Here is some fake Middle Eastern earth. Isle of Dogs earth, but call it. Imagine for a moment that this is Middle Eastern earth. So here we have some good Middle Eastern earth that is mainly sand with a bit of salt mixed in. Now, you might have done this in your science lesson. Starts looking more like kind of traditional London soil when you mix it up a bit. So if you take some sand, some soil, mix it all up, heat it up, stir it in, gradually the salt will dissolve into the soil. Sorry, the salt will dissolve into the water. Keep stirring it, the salt carries on dissolving. Then if you strain it, you strain off the sand, you strain off the mud, you're then just left with the salty water. Then if you heat it up again, you can evaporate off the water. And at the end, you end up with something like this. This is my Blue Peter moment. Here's one I made earlier. So this is the evaporated water with the salt left behind. I could have done the whole thing, but it required fire and so on, which I thought was probably not a good idea. So here is the salt. Now, people have been doing that for thousands of years, to separate out the salt from the sand, from the earth around it. Salt is different to sand. It's different. It has fundamentally different properties. And Jesus says to his followers, "You are the salt of the earth. You are different to the rest. You are different to everyone else. That's your identity. If you are a follower of Jesus, you are chosen by God. Out of all the nations, out of all the people, God has chosen a people for himself. And if you are in God's people, you are different. You are different. Maybe I'll say it just one more time if you haven't heard it. You are different. It is so easy for us to think of ourselves as the same as everyone else around us, particularly if that's the inclination of our hearts. But that's not our identity. As chosen people of God, we are different. But the properties of salt also make it valuable. It has a purpose. So in that phrase, Jesus is also saying to his followers that you are valuable. You have a purpose in God's plan on earth. So if we just think about for a moment what that purpose is, let's think about salt again. What does salt do? Give me a few ideas of what salt does.
Preserves.
Flavors. Sorry, what's that one?
Flavors.
Flavors. Preserves flavors.
Brings out
other flavors. Very good, yeah?
Heals.
It heals, yeah. It kind of purifies, restores. Yeah. Purifies, preserves, adds flavor. So in the same way, we as Jesus' followers somehow preserve, purify, and add flavor to life. So what does that mean? Well, I think we purify and preserve in a couple of ways. One way is that there is a role for the people of God to raise the moral bar, wherever that may be. Now, the rest of the Sermon on the Mount has a lot of challenges. Jesus says that others may teach against adultery, but I challenge you on lust. Others have standards against murder, but I challenge you on anger. And so it goes on. Jesus sets the bar higher for his followers than it's generally set in the world around them. He calls his followers to be peacemakers, merciful, pure in heart, humble. Now, we won't always get that right, but in seeking to live to Jesus' standards, we bring something pure, something of kingdom life to the world. Now, that can also ruffle some feathers, because salt kills the bacteria. It kills the bad stuff. It destroys it in order to preserve the meat. It bites. So Jesus didn't call us the honey of the world, but the salt of the world. So there might be times when living to that bar or that standard or calling out the wrong causes some reaction. But that's also what salt does. But there's also a second aspect to purifying and preserving, as salt stops things perishing. Now, in that sense, Jesus is the perfect salt. Jesus' death on the cross was the innocent one dying for the guilty, paying for all our wrongdoing, cleansing and preserving us for eternal life. Now, that was Jesus' work, but as he works through us by his Spirit, and as we live in that truth, we bring that to the world. So we're the messengers of preservation. So two ways, then, in which we are preservers and purifiers in the world. So what about flavor? Well, I think there's probably many different ways in which that can be interpreted. But I think fundamentally, something we take so easily for granted is that we as followers of Jesus live everyday life in relationship with the God who made us. So we share the same struggles as the world around us. But as God's people, there is joy in knowing him. There is comfort in knowing his love. There is hope in knowing where we're destined. And there is purpose for here and now. And that adds up to a lot of flavor. A lot of seasoning to an otherwise humdrum life. So we're purifiers, we're preservers, and we add flavour to life. We have a purpose in God's plan. You, Jesus says, are the salt of the earth. You're different, and we're called to live differently. Okay, but then comes the warning, which is simply to stay salty. If you get caught up with the sand and stop being distinctive, then you're just like the rest of the earth. And at that point, you have no part in God's plan, you have no part in God's purposes. And Jesus says it in really tough language. He says very simply that you're good for nothing except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. It's hard to imagine him putting that any more starkly. The verb loses relates to the word foolishness, apparently. So Jesus is using that word because he's emphasizing the difference between the wisdom of following Jesus and the foolishness of slipping into following the world around us. He doesn't mince his words to say to us very simply, stay different. Often you'll be tempted to fit in, but don't. Keep walking and living his distinctive way. Keep different. Now, there's probably a lot in that that we can reflect on, and I'm sure it picks up on some of the things that we've all been thinking about over the last few weeks. I think the last few weeks in our Smashing Idols has been really powerful for us as a community, and really powerful for many of us individually. And there are probably lots of thoughts you've had over the last weeks which tie in with this, ways in which we're pulled to be like the world around us. And the history of God's people on this isn't great either. They wanted a king to be like the other nations. They wanted objects to worship to be like the other nations. So much of the stuff which leads us now to wander from God is rooted in our desire to fit in, to be like those around us. Whether it's your entertainment, your self-reliance, your sense of entitlement, all those other things that we've been thinking about over the last few weeks, we all aspire to be or to live in ways that we see others living around us. Now, I referenced John Stott earlier on. I've got one more John Stott quote here, which is slightly more easy to get your head around, but just as powerful. Probably the greatest tragedy of the church throughout its long and checkered history has been its constant tendency to conform to the prevailing culture. If Christians become assimilated to non-Christians and contaminated by the impurities of the world, they lose their influence. The influence of Christians in and on society depends on their being distinct. Would you agree with that? So not apart, but distinct. And that's the challenge. God's purposes for us equally can't be achieved if we stay in neat ecclesiastical salt cellars. We have to be stuck in, rubbed into secular community, just the same way that you can rub the salt into the meat to preserve it. Involved and engaged, but different. And keeping different. Okay, so that's the salt metaphor. That's what Jesus is saying in that very simple phrase, that you are the salt of the earth. Now, much more briefly, light. In some ways, the message is exactly the same, that salt is different to sand and the earth around it. Light is the complete opposite to darkness. You're different. But if the first instruction was to maintain that difference, to maintain who we are, the second instruction is to maximize the impact of who we are, to maximize the impact of that difference. Now, darkness in the Bible, or the absence of light, can be both a spiritual metaphor for those who are blind and don't see or grasp the truth, but also a moral metaphor for those not living God's ways. Jesus said of himself, "I am the light of the world." But this is really quite incredible that he also says to us that you are the light of the world, that by his Spirit we shine something of his light in the world, that as his followers we are beacons of hope, we're conveyors of the truth, we're examples of kingdom life on earth, that our good deeds in his name shine out the grace of God. Now, I bet it doesn't feel like that quite often, but that's what God says is true, that your good deeds shine out the grace of God. He says, together we are light, like a city, and individually we are light, like a lamp. Now, what do you do with the light? It's a light bulb, but you could use an oil lamp or a flaming torch if you want to make it kind of first century relevant. If you want to light a room, you don't put it under a bin. You know, the light is still there, but it now has no impact whatsoever. Rather, you put it on a stand. Very simple. Jesus' illustration is very simple. You put your light up high on a stand, and it maximizes its impact to the area around it. In the same way, a city in a valley is hidden, but on a hill it's prominent and can be seen for miles around. So here is Jesus' challenge. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So your good deeds, your saltiness, your distinctive, godly, consistent goodness as you follow him is a light which points to God. It's not perfect, it's mixed with our flesh, but that goodness of God which is in you is a light which points to God. And that's our purpose in God's plan, that as we live kingdom life, that others are drawn to worship the King. So assuming that we are maintaining our saltiness, that first kind of challenge from Jesus, here's what I want to ask, which is how prominent is our light? How effective is our stand or our hill in enabling our light to have impact? Or are we hiding it? Because I think when I look around us as a body of believers, body of followers of Jesus, when I consider the choices that I know many people make, and the sacrifices that many people make in love for others, there is a lot of goodness. There is a lot of distinctive, salty, God-like goodness amongst us. So the challenge is to maintain that and to encourage each other to maintain that, which is very much what the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, as we go through it over the next few weeks, is going to be about. We are a church that individually and collectively does a huge amount of good stuff as we follow Jesus together. But how prominent do we make it? Are we letting our good deeds shine, maximizing the impact to those around us? Or do we do what we do kind of quietly, keeping news of it in our own private channels, maybe just in the communities that we serve? What would the people who live on Wilmot Street, who maybe don't engage in many of our activities, but live on our doorstep, what would they think of us here if they really knew what goes on here, day in and day out through the week? Now, some I know wouldn't care, and some would probably dismiss us as some kind of saintly fools. But I wonder, might some be curious if they really knew what went on here? Might some be curious and ask? Might some come one day to glorify our Father in heaven? Now, I know we do have our kind of platforms getting out. We've started Hello Spring, Hello Summer over the last couple of years. But I know that I, for one, don't like shouting about the good stuff, either in my life or in the kind of church life. There is so much which can incline me to hide the light. There's fear. There's fear of rejection for being different. I'm definitely in that 75% that doesn't like to be different. I might know that I'm different, but I definitely don't want to show it. There's culture. I think our culture, being British, is to be understated. We don't shout about our achievements, and we certainly don't shout about our goodness. And perhaps most of all, there's a feeling of hypocrisy, that we know everything in our lives isn't perfect, we know everything in our church isn't perfect, so it feels dishonest to draw attention to the good things that are going on. But yet we are told by Jesus to put our good deeds on the stand, up high, on full display, and to let them shine. We're not called to pedestal people, but we are called to pedestal the good deeds. That is part of God's kingdom growing purposes for us. And it does matter. I think we all know those who have come to faith in Jesus because somewhere along the way they met someone or a group of people who were different. People who shone with the light of God. It also really pains me when I hear or read things which so often paint the church in the negative light. I think we probably all know that kind of when we read about the church, followers of Jesus are so often painted as being prejudiced or abusive, harmful, some kind of negative picture. When from inside the church, we know that up and down the country and across the world, there are thousands of followers of Jesus who are serving, loving, sacrificing, building up, and doing good stuff for the world around. But how much of that gets reported? How many on the outside would come to glorify God if they knew the good stuff, the good deeds of his people? Now, there is definitely a collective kind of question to that, but I want to focus this morning really on the personal question. How do I enhance that? How do I give more prominence to the light? So just as a, maybe this is a silly example, but I'm regularly asked, either at school when I drop the children off or at work, you know, what did you get up to last night? How was your weekend? Standard question. I'm sure everyone gets that 20 times a week. Now, do I say, it was great. I got together with a few guys from church to pray for our different workplaces around London. That's a good thing to do. Most people would probably acknowledge that's a good thing to do. But it's quite a different thing to do. So do I say that? Or do I just say, yeah, it's nice, quiet evening, didn't do much. Now, I know that challenge for me. I know that fear of being seen as different, or maybe to put it another way, the desire for a quiet life holds me back from shouting about all the goodness of the people of God. And it's the goodness which reflects God. In hiding the good deeds, we're hiding the opportunity for others to see the grace of God at work in the world. God's purpose is to use us to grow his kingdom by his power and grace to rub our salt into the wounds of the world and to set his light in us boldly into its darkness. So that's the call, that's the challenge, that as God's people we are different and in living his way we live differently. So the challenge is to maintain that difference and then to maximize its impact that God might be glorified. So over the next few weeks, as we go through Jesus' words to his followers, I pray that we would really be able to help each other stay salty, that we would hear the challenges of God in the different aspects of the Sermon on the Mount, and we would stay salty, living his kingdom life and keeping different, keeping to his ways. But I also pray that we might bear his words in mind and be bold in letting the goodness shine, that many, many more may come to glorify him. Amen.